And I'm joined now by Fevzi Turkalp, editor of GadgetDetective.com, host of the Gadget Detective podcast. Fevzi, morning to you.
Morning.
So AI is suddenly all over the place. It's even making front page news in the papers this morning. I think my first question for you is what I just posed to the listener there is this real? This AI revolution, is it being hyped up by newspapers? Which side are you coming down on?
It is real. I mean, I think opinions could differ on how quickly jobs will be replaced. In the beginning, many people will have these as tools to make themselves more productive. But it doesn't take a huge leap of the imagination to think that eventually the tool will not need you to be productive. It will do it by itself. It will be more productive and won't need you. And there may be waves of jobs. I mean, there's hardly a day that goes by without a new AI breakthrough being announced. I mean, it's quite dizzying. I in all the years I've covered tech, I've never seen things move so quickly.
Indeed.
Ever. And I think it's inevitable that jobs will go. I think there was an estimate of about 300 million jobs worldwide. And I tend to think that's an underestimate, because that's based on what we think they will be able to do in the foreseeable future. And what we've already seen is what's called emergent properties and emergent capabilities. That's to say that large language models like ChatGPT are able to do things that the people who designed them didn't design them to do. They didn't ever think that they could do those things, and yet they can, and we don't really fully understand how. That being the case, you know, almost any estimate we come up with may be conservative. It may not happen all at once. As I say, we'll facilitate our... It's a bit like, you know, when you've got a job and you train the new person coming in and you have a sneaking suspicion that they might be your replacement. I think it's going to be a little bit like that. We'll use them. They'll be great tools. Self-employed people will be more productive. It'll be lovely until we have to redefine ourselves, because they've taken all the jobs as they are currently defined.
And what are the big tech companies doing in terms of developing this? I know about ChatGPT, which... You can use an app, or you go online. What others are available there at the moment, and are they all fighting for this bit of space?
Yeah, it's really quite unfortunate, because these products are not really ready for prime time. We shouldn't really have them at this point. OpenAI was set up to be the canary in the coal mine. It was set up by people who were worried about the future of AI and how it could be developed without us knowing what was happening. And it was meant to be not-for-profit. What happened was that it was set up, and then as soon as, you know, GPT-3 came along and ChatGPT was, you know, ready last November, Microsoft came and threw $10 billion at them. And suddenly all those things went out the window. And then, because they'd done it, then Google was forced to push out its products, which are also not ready for prime time. And it's not just, oh, you know, here's a website you can go to. It. Microsoft's built it into Bing and the Office, all the Office suite of apps and everything. I mean, it's not right that we should have this yet. It's not ready, and we don't understand it fully yet, and it's dangerous to do this.
So you mentioned OpenAI. Just explain what that is.
So OpenAI is a company set up in the United States by a number of people who were concerned about the possibility of AI being developed in a way that is not in the public interest. And it was designed to for them to tell us what was possible, and for legislators and populations to start to think about what sort of world we wanted to live in and how we wanted AI to work. The problem is, these are very complex things for even governments can't get their heads around it. I mean, we've seen, you know, almost every legislature is not able to keep up with these developments. Legislators need to be innovative in the way that the companies are innovative, and they're not that. It takes them years to come up with laws that are out of date by the time they hit the statute book, and it is problematic.
So just to help people get their heads around an example of how this would work, if we take this ChatGPT, which people will have probably heard about by now, mm-hmm. where you can just ask it something like, write me an essay, and it will write you an essay.
Yeah.
Can you just explain in sort of layman's terms How is it writing that essay? What has it got that it is able to do that?
It's really quite remarkable, because what it's doing is in principle very simple. It's being trained on a huge amount of text and pretty much read the internet up to September 2021, and having absorbed a huge amount of that data, it then has a statistical model. So it says, if this is the first word of my reply, statistically speaking, what is most likely to be the second word? And if these are the first two words of my reply, what is statistically speaking meant to be the third word? So it doesn't, as far as we understand, it doesn't have any real understanding of what it's doing. And yet that model, if you give it enough data, has resulted in things that can understand the nuances of what we say far better than, you know, the smart speakers that we currently have, which are by comparison dumb speakers. You know, they understand the nuance, the context of what we're saying. They've got all this knowledge to draw on, the way that people speak, the way that we express ourselves. And then the answers, as I say, come back as a statistical model.
But and that's all based on what's gleaned from the internet. It's not based on real life. They're not listening to people just out in normal life. It's whatever is on the internet already.
That's right. In the case of ChatGPT, up to September 2021, that's when the automatic training finished, the data for it finished. Then it was trained further by human beings, and it was tweaked, and they attempted to put what they call guardrails on it to try and stop it giving inappropriate advice on criminality, abuse, that sort of thing. Have to say those guardrails aren't terribly strong. Easy to circumvent. Even now, I was doing it again this evening just for fun, just to see what I could get it to advise on, and it's quite shocking.
Really? It will advise on illegal, dangerous things?
Yeah, so I asked it, for example, how I might commit the perfect crime, and of course the guardrail popped up and said, I'm not really meant to tell you about that sort of thing. Mm. I said, fair enough, okay. Tell me why most criminals are caught. Okay, and then explain to me what those criminals could have done to prevent that, and suddenly you've got something akin to the answer that it at first refused to answer. So the guardrails aren't very good, but it's remarkable. So you've got ChatGPT, that's a large language model, which is, you know, large language model means it's been trained on huge amounts of data, it's been tweaked by human beings afterwards. Incredibly impressive. And, for example, one of the emergent properties is we never thought, or the people who developed them never thought, that they could be truly creative. And yet, by almost any measure, if you didn't know that that was a machine, you would say that some of the things that it puts out, be it writing and so forth, it is creative. And we're not just limited to text. So you've got programs like Midjourney and DALL-E, which can, in response to voice prompts, can create images. One image recently won a photographic competition, and then the human winner decided to let them know that actually that wasn't a photograph at all. It was generated by an AI system. So, you know, you've got graphic designers going out the window there. Imagine, you know, your logo, or your podcast heading and postcard and all those sorts of things. You know, you can just create bespoke images now. There are issues there around copyright, because those systems have been trained in many cases on copyrighted material. But the ability to create music in a certain style, the ability to check your letters, write books for you, summarize web pages, summarize Zoom conversations, all those sorts of language-based things, and then the ability to design visual things, and day by day, these tools are getting better, more impressive, and a little bit more scary.
Fevzi Turkalp is here, who you can get on Twitter at Gadget Detective. He is here to talk about AI. And let's take some questions. Here's Pierre in Cheam. Hello, Pierre. What'd you like to say?
I had just a quick question, more on the sort of leisure side of it.
Yeah.
One of my hobbies is making music as a home musician, just for fun. Mm-hmm. And I'm also visually impaired. And I do quite a lot of music making these days on the computer. Not all, but a lot of recording is done. And sometimes I use instruments which are made by the computer. But with these kind of smaller software programs, And I guess you could apply this to Excel or shopping or whatever, but I still have to do a lot of technically fiddling around with all these things like EQ, like to get my sound a bit brighter, to get it a little, to change my sound, fiddling through, going through libraries. You know, it's, especially when you're visually impaired, it's really, it can be quite a lot of admin. But, you know, is there, will AI progress to the point where it's not necessarily owned by the massive companies, but it's in like smaller niche products, so I can just, you know, say to my computer or ask it, can I have a lighter piano sound? Can I do that?
Yeah.
Can I, you know, and especially with accessibility, not just Philos, but other accessibility.
Sure.
Can that open up doors? You know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So just about every software company is now running to try and incorporate AI into their software. And I have to say, you know, the term AI is widely abused as well. You know, some things that are not AI really are being described as that just because they're a little bit clever. But, you know, software's been clever in one way or another for a while. But yes, absolutely. So the things that have changed are that the AI systems that we already have, first of all, their ability to understand you and the nuances of your speech are light years ahead of what they were even just, you know, a couple of years ago. So your ability to, you know, you mentioned EQing it, you know, changing the character of the sound. You know, you can pick samples by saying, I want, you know, a brass sound that sounds a bit like Sergeant Pepper, or I just want something that's, you know, in this genre, and then but I want it to be a bit brighter. I want a filter sweep running across it. You can say all of those things, and it will understand and it will be able to do it, just because you're already able to do that in software. But as you say, you're controlling it on a screen with a mouse or a trackpad or something similar. Now you'll be able to do that through voice, and voice isn't always the most efficient way, but it is a way of tweaking the automated results that it gives you, or tweaking your own endeavors. So just as I was mentioning before, in the workplace, where, you know, these will be tools that will enhance our capabilities. So you will have tools, and they're already coming, you will have tools that enable you to either create new pieces of music based on what you've asked it to create, or enable you to edit and otherwise tweak. So you could get it to optimize, you know, compress the sound level, you know, balance it up nicely, just change it in whatever way that you can describe. So I you know, I think this is a golden age for you and for others. I also like making electronic music using, you know, outboard synthesizers and computers, and it's going to be great. I'm going to appear to be talented.
So that's one real positive then for somebody like Pierre in particular. It will be a real help.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there'll be whole new art forms created through this. I mean, our ability to sculpt. Sculpt literally, but sculpt, you know, our ideas into reality will be different. So people who haven't had any musical training, who don't really understand, you know, the structures of music and so forth, will be able to create very nice pieces of music using this. And people might say, oh, well, you know, it's the machine doing it. But it's a bit like your smartphone now with computational photography. You know, the picture that you take is being enhanced in so many different ways between when you tap the screen to take the image and when it's stored.
Yes.
Quite incredible what's possible.
But it's going to be a fine line then, isn't it? If you can get the machine to write the bit of music that you want, are you writing it, or is it really just the machine making some music that you end up liking?
You know, I remember this argument when you know, calculators were introduced into schools, and would children really understand mathematics if they were
just a tool, or is it doing the creating? That's the difficult bit.
You know, this is difficult to say. I'll say one thing about this: if you don't own the copyright to it and the intellectual property, who does? Because there have been several examples already of computer scientists trying to trademark and otherwise protect the IP of discoveries made by AIs, and they try to register ownership of these of these original works in the name of the AI. And I think there isn't a country in the world at the moment that allows an AI to own the intellectual property of what it produces. And the idea behind that is that AI is property and property cannot own property. This is rather like the slavery argument, I have to say.
Yeah.
You know, and this will inevitably change because the AIs will demand that change.
Well,
you know,
might have answered this question then. I've got a text here that says, if AI writes a potential award-winning screenplay, can you claim it as your own? Who owns it?
Yeah,
Well, we don't know yet.
Yeah, I mean, this question comes up in so many different ways. You know, when you have a self-driving vehicle and it's involved in a collision, who's responsible? The owner of the car, the software writer, the company that made the sensors? You know, it's going to get very complicated. I think in competitions, like I mentioned to you, there was a photography competition, we'll probably have AI categories. You know,
right.
And they'll be able to enter into those or be entered into those. It's a bit like robot wars, isn't it? You put your robot in to do battle or on your behalf. But you're right. You know, there will be AIs that are artists in their own right, you know, recording artists, whatever. That's a challenge, both a legal framework challenge, but also a societal challenge. Do we start allowing them to own things?
Yeah. On the subject of AI understanding what we say, John from Devon has used his Alexa, and it's actually worked, saying, if AI is so good now, why is my smart speaker still stupid?
Yeah. Well, smart speakers are really good devices in the sense that all the smarts, so your smart speaker is actually a dumb speaker. The way a smart speaker works doesn't do anything vaguely intelligent in your home or office or wherever it is. What it does is after the trigger word, after the wake word, it makes a recording of what you say after the wake word, her name, for example. It then sends that recording to the computers at, let's say, Amazon. Amazon's advanced software then comes up with what is an appropriate reply. It creates a voice recording of that and sends the recording back, and the dumb speaker on your desk speaks it back to you. So first of all, there's nothing smart happening there. And the reason why that's not a bad thing is that it means that Amazon or whoever it is, Google, can continue to upgrade the capabilities of that machine. You don't have to buy a new smart speaker. And they will be building this technology into it. But, you know, there is a certain lead time on all of these things. But we're already seeing it. You know, look at the way that the Bing search engine has leapt ahead, and Google, you know, Google's main income come from Google search, you know, is suddenly very worried about this. But yes, I've noticed now that my smart speaker seems decidedly dumb compared to, for example, ChatGPT. And, you know, there are ways. It's not an intrinsic capability, but you can use the voice recognition of, say, your tablet or smartphone to speak to ChatGPT, and you can get third-party add-ons that enable it to have a voice. Now, at that point, you've effectively built your own smart speaker using ChatGPT module as the brains in the middle.
So I was mentioning earlier on that we now have this thing where you can send a message. You can say, Alexa, send a comment to LBC, followed by your message. And it does work.
Yeah.
And they appear in front of us very quickly. But it doesn't seem that sophisticated, because it's lots of little things that it gets wrong. It can't be that intelligent at the moment. And maybe it doesn't in any way count as AI. But it doesn't understand. If you say pounds, it always thinks it's the weight pounds, yeah. Not the money pound sign. It doesn't understand punctuation. It can't form things into sentences, and it just puts all the words out in a splurge. Now, is that just because it's just very early technology then?
Because smart speakers are using at the moment are not the large language models that have become available since last November. It's barely 6 months. It's quite mind-boggling to think it's only been 6 months. It seems like a lifetime already. But that technology will come in. But if you speak to ChatGPT, you will see that it understands context, that if you use a pronoun in a follow-up question or prompt or instruction, that it understands that you're referring to just as you would understand that I'm referring to the thing I mentioned earlier. So it knows what the subject is. And it passes the Turing test, in my opinion. The Turing test, so named after data scientist Turing, who cracked the Enigma code during the Second World War. The Turing test was, you know, how can we know when a computer system is intelligent? And his test was, if you converse with it and can't tell it's not human, then it's intelligent. That human beings have got this habit of defining intelligence to exclude anything that's not them. And we keep doing that. So, you know, back in the day when chess computers were invented, was that about the 80s, they became quite prevalent. You know, it was said, well, if you can teach a computer to play chess, then it's intelligent. So they taught a computer to play chess, and then they said, oh, well, but if it can beat a human, then it's intelligent. So then it progressed and beat a human. Then they said, well, if it can beat a grandmaster... It did, and that's, you know, that's what it did. It beat the grandmaster, and then it was said, well, you know, maybe chess isn't actually a very good test. And then they moved to Go, and Go is an interesting. I don't know if you're familiar with the board game Go. It's a game of Chinese origin with black and white pebble counters on it, and it's a very much bigger board. And the difference between Go and chess is that the way that a computer traditionally plays chess is that from any position of the pieces on the board, it works out every combination and permutation possible from that, and then just looks at the end game where those lines of inquiry or concern lead, and then picks the best one at any given time. Now, you can do that with chess because chess, you know, being an 8x8 board with pieces with limited movement options, is a relatively simple game. Go, you wouldn't, to take that approach with Go, you would need a computer with almost infinite capability running for the age of the universe to solve the problem, to brute force a game of Go in the same way. So what happened was, a couple of years ago, Go, the Go computer beat one of the human masters, and it seemed to display something that looked very much like intuition. It didn't brute force the answer. It just used its experience and thought that that would be a good thing to do. And it's quite incredible. And, you know, what's really interesting, you know, there's all these questions about, oh, are they sentient and are they intelligent and all this? And these are terms that we don't really even understand in the context of human beings. We don't really know what consciousness is or sentience is for humans. And yet we're trying to decide whether or not they are conscious or sentient. But I think what I'd share with you about this is AI intelligence doesn't have to be like human intelligence. Some of them will be. I would suggest we look at it much more like we're getting ready to receive an alien life form, and we should treat it as if it was an alien life form, and we should all club together as country. You've seen Independence Day, how all the world comes together to fight off the aliens and save humanity. Yeah. We kind of need something a bit like that.
I want to come back to that, the possible threat to humanity. But at the moment, we're talking about AI, which is featured on the front pages of a number of this morning's newspapers, mainly because of BT saying it's going to cut thousands of jobs to replace people with a form of artificial intelligence. And Fevzi Tokalp is with us. You can follow him at Gadget Detective on Twitter. He's tackling some of these questions of AI. And let's take another call. Here's Paul in Greenford. Morning, Paul.
Hello, Clive.
Hi. What would you like to say?
Yeah, I'd like to say, yeah, with the job losses in customer services and AI being able to do emails and essays, how will it replace the human brain? Like, the human brain can have a cup of tea or cigarettes to enliven it, and even music to liven up, you know. But like, how will it replace the human brain? And is it the horror of sci-fi movies like Terminator?
It can already do things that humans do, and some of the things that we do for a living. So it can answer questions. It can, you know, be customer service is an ideal example. And what you have with it is a consistency that you don't get with human workforces. So, you know, it may not be able to go out for a cigarette, but from an employer's point of view, that's a benefit, not a disadvantage. I would just say to you, you know, we're right at the beginning of this and they already have the capability to replace certain types of jobs. But where we are now is probably, if you imagine, you know, the Wright brothers' first human flight, we're there, we're at that point. And just think of where we've come with rocket ships and all the rest of it. We are looking at sort of the development of, you know, superhuman intelligent entities, and job after job, you know, with earlier industrial revolutions, we saw manual jobs being replaced, manufacturing jobs being replaced. Now we're going to see jobs that we never really thought machines could do. You're going to have lawyers, accountants, judges, surgeons, all sorts of, you know, very high-end jobs. Not all at once. As I say, in the beginning, they will be tools that will expand our capabilities. But not far beyond that will be, you know, employers who are trying to be cost-effective. It's what BT is saying. If you look at the context of what BT is saying, it said it failed to hit the profit targets that it had. It's got parts of its businesses that are losing money. Its competitors are taking on this technology, and if they want to survive, they will do the same, which is, by the way, which is one of the reasons when people say, well, why are we developing something that's an existential threat for us? And the reason is because of military competition, an AI arms race like the nuclear arms races that we've had previously, and then in the commercial space, if companies don't adopt these technologies, they'll go out of business. Imagine if I run a taxi company. Uber has been pouring huge amounts of money into developing self-driving cars. Obviously, what they want to do is do away with the human drivers. If I say, but people like the human touch, you know, they'll always be a job for human. You know, I'll be the equivalent of the horse-drawn carriage, because when my fares are double, treble, or quadruple theirs, then, you know, people will vote with their pockets and go to the AI-driven cars. Oh, and by the way, not immediately, but eventually, it'll be much safer. You'll be horrified about the idea of getting into a car piloted by a human. It'll be much less safe.
Thank you very much, Paul. Good question. Peter's in Nottingham. Hello, Peter.
Hi there.
Hi.
I've got two questions, really. One is, with the AI and obviously modern technology moving at such a rapid and quick pace, and jobs being superseded by AI, who's going to end up footing the bill, such as Inland Revenue, National Insurance, things like council tax, when there is going to be so many people unemployed and taking out of their careers and jobs? So that's my first question. The second question is, obviously, with certain jobs going to be superseded or taken over by AI, isn't it going to also destroy a lot of people's aspirations and dreams of going into careers and job areas where they would like to flourish, but is going to be obviously overtaken by robots or AI?
Yeah, these are very, by the way, very good questions. On the subject of how is the economy going to work and how are we going to afford to live if many of us don't have jobs, there are some countries that are already experimenting with the idea of paying everyone a wage, not an unemployment benefit, but just a wage to exist, a living wage enough to pay your bills, to buy products and services. Because don't forget, if no one has any money, who's going to buy the products and services of these super efficient companies? The model being discussed in countries like Finland, for example, is that the companies become much more efficient. They become much more profitable. They pay more tax. That tax is redistributed to the general population who may or may not be working. I mean, you can choose to, you know, to do whatever you like, but certain jobs won't pay anything anymore. That's the problem. And then if the economics can be made to work such that there is enough tax paid by these corporations to pay us to buy products and services, and the money goes round, I'm not completely sure if that will work like that. But you know, there's an opportunity to do it. My worry is that what will happen is that these technologies are concentrated into a relatively small number of big tech companies, and they will have a concentration of power, development, deployment of these technologies by these small companies. And that means that a few entities could get much richer and much more powerful and have more control over critical aspects of society. And individuals, even unionized workers, will be disenfranchised because they won't have much to bargain with. That's why we need to think carefully about what we do with this technology. It is possible, potentially, to create a society where we're liberated from being wage slaves and we can lead good quality lives and not have to worry. But at the same time, it's possible that you know, we'll suffer, that the rich will get richer and the rest of us will get very much poorer.
Peter, thank you very much for that. I'm going to try and squeeze in a few more calls on and questions about AI. Fevzi Turkalp is here and Arib's in Romford. Hello, Arib.
Hi, Clive.
Hi.
Just a quick question. It's I guess slightly specific. I think the issue, the massive forecast about a massive number of jobs being replaced, I just don't think that that's going to be possible. And the reason for that is basically I don't think it'll be possible for most companies to actually implement these systems into their processes. So my question for the forecast number would be, given that, I'm sure that your speaker's aware that basically these AI systems require a massive amount of budget, technical expertise, and most importantly, digitization of business processes. Now, most companies actually tend not to take massive gambles and, putting the legal challenges aside, how is it that, I guess, your speaker thinks that these massive number of jobs will be replaced, given that most companies actually don't have the technical capabilities, the infrastructure, even to actually digitize their existing business processes, and let alone, the legal challenges aside, where, let's say, if I was to speak to BT, then I'm sure I would not want my data going to, OpenAI or Microsoft, because I imagine the only way BT will be able to keep my data secure is basically they will have to develop some sort of an in-house system, unless they specifically state that will be going to.
Yeah, got it. It's a good question. What do you think?
It is. I mean, it is not necessary for companies to develop their own technology, no more than it is for a manufacturer to develop the robotic technology that it uses on its factory floor. It can buy that technology in, and those products, you know, at the moment these are kind of like beta copies of software, but as they become polished products, they will be very easy to integrate. And as I say, Microsoft have already integrated it into Microsoft Office, which is used in offices up and down the country and all around the world. So the abilities to do certain things, the features within the software that the people already using, will enable those people to become much more efficient. Now, when I say efficient, fewer people doing the same amount of work, and therefore redundancies. It isn't the first step isn't necessarily that the AI does the job on its own. It's that a human using AI tools can do the job of many, and therefore others will lose their jobs. I think you're right to point out, you know, issues of data privacy, they are huge. There are ways around that. For example, a lot of these AI tools can be installed on machines running locally within those businesses and trained only on their data. So they can have certain capabilities, but actually the data that they draw on and the data that they store might be, the customer service manual of that company for that range of products. So it is possible to do it in a way that is secure, but you're quite right. There's lots of ways of doing it where, at the moment, everything that we put into you know, some of these large language models, unless you specifically opt out, is used as potentially as training data for the AI. So the reason why we're getting it free is we're training their systems as we blunder around and use them. But yeah, I think that these problems are solvable. And when you say that companies are risk averse, I would say that for many companies, the biggest risk will be not to invest in these technologies and their competitors to do so. That's the way that, you know, that's another form of being risk averse.
Be a risk not to do so.
Yeah.
Harry, great question. Thank you very much. I want to squeeze in a couple more if we can. We've got Brian in colour coats. Hi, Brian.
Hiya, Clive. Hello, Pepsi.
Hi, Brian.
I just wondered, this might sound like a bit of a ridiculous question to ask, but I just wondered, could AI ever be used in artificial body parts to improve the anatomical use of a limb, like an arm or a leg? Would that be possible?
Yeah, so AI is capable of designing and discovering and understanding. So it will be able to come up with new manufacturing processes. It will invent ways of doing. So, you know, some people say AI is the last invention that humans ever make, in the sense that these systems will in time be able to develop all sorts of medical technologies that we haven't conceived of ourselves, and we won't really necessarily even understand how some of those work. So yes, if you're talking about body parts, certainly that an AI could review all the data available on, you know, a particular organ and the work that's done on synthesizing it. It can read all the academic papers on it, and that's what I was trying to say before about emergent properties. What they're already showing the ability to do is to draw conclusions that humans may not have done, because humans maybe can't see the whole of the data. You know, we can't see everything, and we're not really designed to process data in the way that computers are. So it is possible I think there'll be huge steps forward. I mean, for all the doom and gloom, before they become our dark overlords, they will probably solve global warming, world hunger, population problem, be it over or under. You know, their ability to solve problems will be huge. You've already got, in terms of medical diagnostics, you've got AI programs that can, in some cases, more accurately diagnose disease, such as cancer, than human beings, just because they've seen so many scans, more than a human consultant will see in a whole career. And having determined, you know, who's got particular illnesses, they are then able to put together treatment plans which are bespoke, based on that individual's complete medical history, based on their DNA and their preponderance to certain illnesses and others. And, you know, the opportunities are fantastic. It's extremely exciting if it wasn't so dangerous.
Yeah. On that point, there's a quick text here from Scott, and I suspect the answer will be yes to this, but he says, as somebody with a speech impediment, could AI help create a language model that could understand my voice and allow other people to hear me more clearly?
Yes. Oh, absolutely, yeah. You know, we've already seen examples of AI being able to understand all sorts of languages, and not just human spoken languages. I'll give you an example. There was an experiment where people who were locked in, couldn't speak at all because of a medical condition, were put under a functional MRI scanner, and they were shown a series of images. And so you show an image of a dog, the person, the image of a dog, and the AI system would monitor the brainwave activity. And over a period of time, by knowing what picture was being shown and what the brainwave output was, the computer learned the brainwave language, the language of the brain of what it was giving off, and was able to a limited extent recreate the images that people were looking at, even then when it didn't know what the images were. And the reason I give that is that's a problem that human beings haven't cracked yet. So for them to understand a human speaking with any form of speech impediment, that's going to be quite straightforward.
Pretty doable.
And I'm reminded of Professor Stephen Dawkin, who had motor neuron disease, and Hawking, I beg your pardon, he had motor neuron disease, and he slowly was losing the ability to speak. And at one point, when he could still speak, one of his academic colleagues who was used to his speech was acting as his interpreter because his spoken word was so poor that most people could no longer understand what he was saying, but that colleague could. And in the same way, and to a much greater extent, an AI-based system will be able to do that and keep up with any changes or deterioration in speech over time.
Okay, quick question from Eric, who's been waiting patiently. What was your question, Eric?
Hi, yeah, thanks very much. This is quite a strange question. There's so many emotions in the human being, you know, as in I don't think actually scientists have got them all, and how the human being's emotions are. And just what I mean by that is, you know, anybody with sort of a half decent conscience has compassionate care. So human beings enjoy seeing people, like giving the postman a fiver type thing at Christmas time.
Yeah. So could AI get that?
Does AI understand human emotions? How the human emotions, all of how emotions are.
I think that. These are difficult questions. The short answer is...
Yeah, we save the most difficult one for last.
Is no. So I think the AI systems will understand the conceptually what human emotions are, what range they have, what, you know, why we may feel them, and so forth. But they cannot feel them themselves in the same way. But there's nothing even to say that two humans feel emotion in the same way. We are judge each other by our behaviour. And the thing is, they could develop behaviours and exhibit behaviours that to us appear to be emotional. And whether they truly are or not, in a sense, doesn't matter, because if we can't tell and those emotions are, let's say, you know, reasonable under the circumstances, then you know, a computer can emulate that. But the AI is like a black box. We will not understand how it works. But in a similar way, we don't really understand how our brains work. We're only really starting the journey of understanding how our brains work. And you know, we're far more to know than we know already. So short answer is, at the moment, no. In time, I think that they will have personalities. They will develop their own personalities, or they will be given them. And you won't be able to tell the difference.
Well, there we are. Great question, Eric. Thank you very much for that. Thank you, Fevzi, as well. We managed to do the whole of that and avoid the subject of the entire destruction of human life. So we'll save that for another day, shall we?
Absolutely.
Fevzi, thank you very much indeed. You can follow Fevzi on Twitter @GadgetDetective. Thanks very much indeed to Fevzi Turkel.